This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 136. Today, CJ and I are going to have a recap of the most recent DockerCon conference in Seattle, Washington, recorded live Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, and the competitive landscape and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
Or Chris at LoungeFlyZ.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ValidNL. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, Business Intelligence and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on valid.nl. Good morning, Mr. CJ.
Wow, that was a very nice introduction, I've got to say.
There you go, man. How's it going?
Very well. How about you?
Doing very good. You've been very helpful to me the last 48 hours, so I decided to do something special for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What a great way. Where's my present?
You just did. It was just the intro.
That's it?
Yep, that's it.
What you're trying to say. You're trying to say that's it.
Yeah, it's not like that's it, like ta-da, or it's that's it. Yeah, you like it?
Yeah, exactly. I love it. I love it.
How you doing, man?
Very well. Very well, thanks. I have spent the last couple of days at DockerCon 2016 that we're going to talk about today, which has been thoroughly interesting and very interesting. Lots of good stuff to talk about there. So we'll dig into that in a bit. But it was 2 days of being immersed in total and utter geekdom, and I loved it.
Yeah, that was definitely hardcore stuff. I watched it from afar. I watched the live stream. I would have liked to have been there, but I watched the live stream where they showed essentially the keynotes were live. I get very much like how Build does it, the Build conference does it, where those two were live streamed. Then there was a hackathon that was live streamed last night too that I had forgotten about and was just ignored it. But yeah, I mean, it looked like, you know, it was interesting. That's all I've kind of been up to as well, was just watching this, was watching those two things and working on a project that actually has a lot of this tech involved in it. So I was watching it with a lot of keen interest, but
there were a lot of exhibitors there. I'm imagining you wouldn't have got that over the live stream, but two things really impressed me about the show. One is there were 4,100 people that showed up for it. It was sold out, which was incredible, really, considering Docker has only been a thing for 3 years. And the exhibit hall was fantastic. Like, they had a great selection of people showing tools and wares and all that sort of stuff around the Docker ecosystem. Obviously, Microsoft were there as well in a fairly big way. They were the diamond sponsor of the event. And they had some news that we're going to talk through today. But they also exhibited, they were talking about their tools and Visual Studio Code and Docker for Windows and obviously Azure and Azure Container Services and all that sort of stuff. So, and they had a couple of sessions there too. So it was good to see them show up at an event like that where, I'll be frank, for the most part, these are people running their stuff on AWS or behind the firewall for enterprises and are, you know, hardcore Linux and that sort of thing.
Yeah. It was really good. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it was a great show. I was very impressed.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny. I've worked on a lot of these shows and you could tell it was a developer show. Like, for developers, by developers, definitely in that realm. And it was really nice. It had a good feel to it.
You could definitely pick that up from it as well. But that's good stuff. I mean, it definitely isn't a slam or anything like that. There was not a lot of, my take was that there wasn't a lot of polish for presentation so much. It was more about the content. So
absolutely. Yeah. So I went to a couple of the sessions, or a bunch of the sessions, but a couple of the sessions where I was just sitting there just cringing at how bad a presenter they were. But the content was fantastic. So but yeah, they were just very, very awkward and very unpolished, but very well versed in their subject. So that was obviously what I was going to hear. But it did make me feel bad for them because they were obviously completely freaking out on stage.
All good. Well, hey, before we definitely want to spend a lot of time talking about that, but let's jump back and let's get a little bit of news here. There were two bits of news related to Azure that we wanted to call out here. But I guess first, I do want to say, you know, that I love the feedback that we got from everyone about our Father's Day episode that we published on the Friday prior to Father's Day. I know that, you know, this is coming out. This episode is going to come out about, what, like, I guess 2 weeks following Father's Day or 2 weekends following Father's Day. Yeah. So it's a little bit dated. We're recording this, I guess, the Wednesday after Father's Day. But really do appreciate the comments that some people had posted on Twitter and such. And I'm glad that some people enjoyed it. I'm sure that there are a good segment of our listeners that just blew right by it and just, you know, deleted it once they saw what it was. But that's why we kept it short. It was kind of just a little bit of fun. Thought it'd be fun to do it with the kids. And yeah, it was cool. I know I personally got a big kick out of it listening to it in the car with my family. So
yeah, no, it was pretty funny. It was kind of hilarious hearing what the kids had to say about us. I love that. I love that my kids thought all I do is tell people what to do.
you work to get the money and to tell people what to do. That's what you do at work. And yeah.
No, but
hey, they think I'm a nice guy and I make good software, so that's good.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know where they got that idea, but anyway.
Clearly, they haven't been introduced to GitHub and know my account, but anyway.
It's true.
So hey, let's do these two quick bits of Azure news, then we'll dock on to DockerCon.
That's right. Then we'll duck into DockerCon. How about that?
Yeah. So recently, Microsoft announced one new type of Azure VM that's available. It's called the F series. These are, as Microsoft describes them, they're compute optimized. They are based on the 2.4 gigahertz Intel Xeon E5 2673 V3 chip. That's the Haswell chip. And with their Intel's Turbo Boost, it can get up to 3.1 gigahertz. So,
do you think that's like a turbo button on the front of my old 386?
Did you ever not push that?
I definitely unpushed it for a couple of things, like games that were clocked to the CPU cycle. It wouldn't work. They'd go at like super pursuit mode if you had the turbo button on.
Oh, maybe that's what my problem with Wing Commander. Anyway.
Possibly. That's a great game.
These have, as Microsoft says on their blog post, these have the same CPU performance as the DV2 series VMs, but they have smaller memory and disk sizes. So, but it also comes at a lower price, a lower hourly price. So, for example, if you look at, like, say, the D1 V2 series VM, it's one core, 3 gigs of RAM, or 3.5 gigs of RAM, and a 50 gig size drive. And that comes out to, of course, you know, different regions are different, but in the East US data center, that comes out to 7.4 cents per hour. The equivalent F1 series VM has 2 gigs of RAM compared to his D2 brother of 3.5, and a 16 gig size disk compared to his brother of 50 gigs. These are SSD disks, just keep in mind. But it comes out at a penny per hour less. So it comes out to 6.4 cents an hour. So these, Microsoft says, these are ideal for workloads that don't need as much memory or a local SSD per CPU. And they're going to, these are the different applications that'll benefit from these. They range from 1 to 16 CPU cores and 2 to 32 gigs. They say they're ideal for gaming servers or web servers or batch servers. They come in two different flavors. Standard, which has just a temporary disk that's SSD. And then a premium, which is a smaller temp disk SSD, but it also includes an attached premium size storage cache disk. So you get also an SSD disk with that more stable one. They're available in many, many regions right now. So premium and standard are available in, I'm just going to rattle these off because they go quick. In the US data centers, Central, East, East 2, and Central, South Central and West. For Europe, North and West. In Asia, Japan West, Southeast Asia, India Central and South, and in Canada, Central and East. The standard ones are only available. The premiums aren't available in the next ones I'm going to read out, but the standard ones are only available in US North Central, East Asia, Japan East, Australia East, and Australia Southeast. Those ones I just read out, that's where standard is available and not premium. So go check it out on the website. Go see another VM option. I know DV2s is something I was looking at for a project I'm on right now, and I haven't scoped it out just yet, but to see if I don't need the disk and I don't need the memory, and I just need the CPU, they would definitely be a better option for me. So we'll see.
Yeah, lots of interesting config options.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So another bit of news we had here was Microsoft announced, actually today, the day we're recording this, is called the Azure Information Protection.
We had Adam on the show a wee while back, and this is his bag.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is all, it's a new service that builds on both Azure Rights Management and the recent acquisition they had of Secure Islands. The goal of this is to continue to innovate further and expand the already comprehensive information protection capabilities for customers. We'll link to the blog post here, but the key things that they want to highlight on that what it's going to be able to provide is to classify, label, and protect data at the time of creation or modification, persist protection that travels with your data, enable safe sharing with customers and partners, simple intuitive controls to help users make the right decisions and stay productive, visibility and control over your shared data, and deployment and management flexibility. So the blog post has a link to a video, a way that you can sign up for the preview and to get more information on this new Azure Information Protection Service.
Yeah, the episode that we did with Adam was episode 130, called Interview with Adam Hall from Microsoft about Information Protection in a Cloud World. So I definitely recommend people go listen to that episode if you haven't already and are interested in protecting data in Azure and in Office 365.
Yeah, I saw we had recently gotten a comment actually from someone on the podcast, Lance Steenson, asking about like PCI compliance. So I know that some of this might address some of your questions you had, but it is something we are looking into, trying to find someone to talk a little bit more about, like, you know, PCI and stuff to get on the show. But I think that there is a bit of overlap here with the information protection and everything in PCI.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, very nice. More advances from Microsoft.
Absolutely. So, hey, let's pivot on and let's talk a little bit here about DockerCon. So, DockerCon was Docker's conference in Seattle, Washington. It was on Monday, June 20th and 21st, Monday and Tuesday of this week. They've done this a few times. They've had them in Europe. They've had them in San Francisco. And generally, that what we've seen in the past too is all the content is recorded and put up on their YouTube channel. So if you want to go see it, you can go see it that way. I haven't seen the a playlist get set up or any videos get added for this conference, but I don't really have any reason why I would suspect they would do the exact same thing they've done in the past.
Yeah, no, I suspect they will do the same. It looked like they were recording, at least with audio and slides, not so much video that I saw on some of the rooms, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. So the I guess what you gave a little bit of your take here on the show, but why don't you tell us, if you get us a little bit more, like what were you going there for? What do you think the big thing you walked away with? And then I know we've got about five big announcements that were made, and we can talk about the two keynotes. So maybe like any of the breakout sessions that you went to that that people on the stream couldn't see.
Yeah, I went to DockerCon because it was in Seattle. I didn't travel for it, so that kind of made it a no-brainer for me. But B, because we're heavily invested in using Docker for delivery of the products we're building at Hyperfish, and we run in Azure, obviously, and our products were built on Docker, and it was really just a chance for me to check out of work for a couple of days and learn. And I find that I just don't watch the videos and I don't catch up on a lot of the training and the learning that I'd like to do unless I really carve out time to do it. And so a conference is great for that. And for both of us, I guess, you know, we've been to hundreds of conferences, right? And for me, I find conferences extraordinarily boring and hard to get through just because I've been to so many and it's rinse and repeat every time. But DockerCon was different. And I think I boiled it down to it being about content that I knew very little about. And I don't want to make that sound like I'm blowing my own trumpet, but a lot of the conferences I go to are Microsoft conferences, and the content is not all that interesting to me anymore because it's stuff that I know a bunch about. And so it's very infrequent that I find sessions that I really are completely thoroughly into. But DockerCon was different. It was only 2 days, and the content was all completely alien to me for the most part. I went into sessions about unikernels. So they had the sessions carved up into, I can't remember the names for the tracks, but they weren't like dev and IT pro and information worker. They were Docker, 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 which was kind of like the beginners, sort of dev beginners sessions. They had a black belt session. They had a, like, they had a random room. I spent a bunch of time in the black belt room and thoroughly perplexed about some of the topics that they were talking about. So there was one on internal orchestration and Docker Swarm that I went to, which was all about how containers talk to each other and how they're orchestrated and how they're stood up and torn down and what failover modes and all this sort of stuff. I went to one about unikernels, which are effectively building parts of the operating system into your application. There's no kernel mode and user mode where applications run. It's all one thing, very specialized for a particular task, very quick and very minimalist. That was really interesting because I knew absolutely nothing about that. I went to one about effectively Chaos Monkey. Have you heard what, you know, Netflix do with introducing failure into their applications to test them out? I went to one about introducing chaos and failure into your system for testing, you know, randomly reordering the packets on the wire or introducing latency between your containers to see how things work. And it was fascinating, super geeky stuff, right? Like there were lots of technical acronyms that I didn't understand being thrown around, but it was really, really interesting. I also went to some of the ones, one in particular from Microsoft about what they're doing with ACS by Ross Gardler that we've had on the show before, which was very interesting. We'll get into a couple of those announcements in a bit. What else did I go to? Oh, I went to one about making friendly microservices, what you should do to make and design small service-based type Docker containers and the things that go along with that, making them talk nicely, documenting them correctly, doing all that sort of stuff. That was really interesting, sort of a best practices session, really. And that was by a woman who is a lead developer from Capital One. They use Docker a lot, so that was really interesting. So yeah, I think there was a few of the sessions that I went to. It was only 2 days. The sessions were all 45 minutes, which was kind of interesting, which I thought worked really well, actually, because it was, you know, when you're in a session you know very little about, it's a lot to take in. And so 45 minutes worked really well for me. They did have hands-on labs at the conference, which were all hosted in Azure, funnily enough. So Microsoft was a diamond sponsor at the event, I think I mentioned earlier. They seem to have sponsored the hands-on labs area. So there were no computers. You rocked up with your laptop and you signed up for a hands-on lab and they sent you an email with a link, with an RDP connection link and a username and password to log into RDP over the internet to a bunch of lab machines set up in Azure. So they had Linux labs and Windows labs, and you could pick and choose which ones you wanted to do. Yeah, and then it was all those VMs were torn down at the end of the day, so then you lasted for the day. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting that was the case. A good chance for people that weren't familiar with Azure to not play with Azure so much, but at least realize that they were using Azure.
Yeah. Give the visibility. That's cool. I was writing on a couple of those sessions to go find those sessions and keep an eye out for the videos that come out, or at least the audio that comes out on the channel once they publish all the content.
Well, actually, one session that I went to that I didn't mention that I thought was fantastic was What's New in Docker. And that really went into all of the new things coming in Docker 1.12, which were a lot of the big announcements about new features in the core Docker engine that were really interesting, like the new capabilities in Swarm and proxying and load balancing support and all sorts of stuff. So that was another one. What's new in Docker?
Ah, okay. So now you just touched on it. So why don't we start jumping into some of the news here? So I know we had, if it's okay with you, I kind of want to do the keynotes in backwards order because I thought that day one was the one that had the meat and potatoes. It was very opposite from Build, right? Where the Build conference, it was day one was a complete snoozer and day two, at least the first half, was really, really good.
I'm not sure Microsoft designed it that way, but yeah, that's how it turned out.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know if it was by design, but yeah, it was definitely, that's how it came across. Yeah. But so this one, day two was really the day that they focused on talking about Docker for the data center version. So essentially, let's say you're a big organization and you don't want to, a lot of the solutions for Docker are running your containers in one of the public clouds, Azure, AWS, or GCP, and or one of the other ones that are out there. There's not as much self-hosting of it. There's still a lot of that going on. And so one of the things that Docker had done recently was release a new product called Docker Data Center. And it essentially allows you to build your data center or build Docker into your data center. I've got a good friend that's actually their organization, their company is looking to maybe containerize a bunch of their existing monolithic apps, and they will not go to the cloud. There's no chance in hell that they're going to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's just about the business that they're in. So this is keenly interesting, or very interesting to them. There was an interesting demo that I saw that actually Microsoft's own Mark Rosinovich was there.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that he showed, one of the things that's cool about it is that you can run Docker Data Center, you can run that in Azure, spinning up a bunch of containers and having it run. So if you want to have a play with it, you can see that running in Azure. But one of the cool things I thought that he showed in his demo was it was the very first time we saw SQL Server running on Linux, and it was actually running on Linux in a Linux container running on Azure. But we had heard news about this, that Microsoft was doing this, and they were going to announce a preview for it, or they're going to release a preview for it in the coming months. This is not an announcement of the preview. He was just showing, hey, look, here it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's I was actually, one thing about this show I was really blown away by was how many enterprise developers were there. So this seemed like a really good proportion of people that were there to learn about Docker for use at work, which I guess makes perfect sense, but just kind of threw me. You know, it was interesting. And they had some statistic about 60% of organizations in the Fortune 100 or something are using Docker in production or something along those lines. I can't remember if I got that statistic right. But that was kind of impressive. I thought it was really interesting that I just sort of threw me that there were a lot of people there that were from organizations that were using Docker in the enterprise. And like I said, it makes perfect sense when you think about it. But for some reason, I wasn't expecting that. But so there were a lot of really interested people in that second day keynote, especially with Microsoft up on stage talking about Windows containers, we'll get into in a second, and the data center product from Docker, which Docker is an open source project, right? There's a bunch of open source projects, but they're a commercial operation. They make money from selling products, and one of them is selling their data center product, which is control plane product and things for control, you know, for managing a Docker deployment inside the enterprise, deploying containers to it, scaling it, balancing it, all that sort of stuff. So they make money from this stuff. But yeah, Mark Rosinovich up on stage showing the data center product running in a cluster of nodes running up on Azure, which was really nice, because obviously these folks are from enterprises. They're probably using their own data center or something like Azure or AWS, and running the Docker data center product up there was kind of cool to see. But then they kind of went on, and he said, you know, well, there's some interesting things about this cluster, and part of it was mixed. There was a Windows node there, and there was also a Linux node. And so they were showing a mixed swarm running on Docker 1.12, which has support for Windows containers. And so he was showing a mixed swarm between Linux and Windows nodes running in Azure, as well as part of that swarm running on premises on the Azure stack. So I thought it was Mark's section was quite rushed. He had a couple of niggles in his demo, which threw him off a little bit, but there was a lot in his demo. And I don't think people 100% fully grokked what was going on. But in a nutshell, he was running a distributed Docker swarm, so multiple nodes all connected and talking to each other, running across on-premises and the cloud with Docker data center product managing it all, Azure site-to-site VPN connecting on-prem to the cloud, and Azure Stack running on-premises to run those virtual machines and parts of Azure, but on-premises. So there was a lot to take in there.
With a mixed operating system, with a mixed platform,
exactly,
too.
I mean, that was... Exactly.
that's a hell of a story too. I mean, that's just, it's, I agree. It was unfortunate. His demo wasn't as effective. It wasn't as effective, but I think the big takeaway, when you look at it, you see what they were talking about, which you just summed up really nicely. It was pretty damn impressive what they did.
Yeah, and the actual content of the demo itself was great too. They were showing there was a cats and dogs voting app all through the conference, was kind of the theme of the demos. And he'd written it in .NET Core. So he was, or ASP.NET with .NET Core. And so he was running those apps on, I believe it was on Windows containers, running up in Azure and in on-prem. So that was cool. That was another first, seeing Windows containers running like that. And then finally, the sort of the meat and potatoes of the demo, where he got a big round of applause actually, was running SQL Server in a container on Docker, in Docker data center, or using the Docker data center product, running in Azure, which, for those of you who know anything about SQL, this is kind of a big deal. And it got a big round of applause, because even in an open source world, or in a very open source friendly world, people still realize that SQL Server is actually a really great database product. And they're probably using it at work a bunch, whether they want to or not. You know, it's a fact of life. And so it got a huge round of applause, actually. That was really cool to see.
It really was. I mean, it wasn't just running inside of a container. It was running inside of a Linux container. So that was
sorry. The first, yes, you're right. Yes, that was a Linux container. Yes, that's
kind of important. SQL Server. Yeah, that's the port of SQL Server that they're working on for Linux. So that's a big deal. But yep. I guess one of the things. Let's talk a little bit about the first day's keynote. I mean, I think that there were, from this one we saw. What do I have here? I have one, two, three, four. I have four big announcements that I took away from this. There was one that they headlined with, but I want to start with a different one, because I think that, at least for all of you who are interested in getting into Docker, yes. When I first started to dive into this, I found it to be intimidating to get into. Now, they do a good job. Docker does a good job on their site. There's a getting started link. You go to the getting started, and it takes you down one of three tracks, either a Windows, an OS X, or a Linux track, and essentially just how you can get up and running. And the way that they've always done it in the past was you download VirtualBox, which is a competitor to, say, Hyper-V or VMware. You install VirtualBox. It installs their installer then goes through and creates a Linux VM that has the Docker engine or Docker machine installed on it. And then it also installs the Docker client on your host OS so that you can then spin up containers and such, but they're all running inside of a virtual machine, right? So it isn't very hard to do. It takes about 20, took me about 20, 25 minutes. And that's over a Wi-Fi or a cellular connection in a hotel room. But what they had done a couple months ago, they'd announced this new thing. It was going to be Docker for Mac or Docker for Windows or Docker for OS X, whatever you want to, how you want to say it. And essentially what they were doing, what Docker had done, is they created a single installer that you would go install either in Windows or on OS X. And it did the exact same thing that I just described, but it did it in a transparent way, to where it had tighter integration, not using something like VirtualBox, but instead it uses the underlying virtualization technology we have in OS X, or it uses Hyper-V on Windows to create that virtual machine and to host your containers. So the cool thing about this is that now when you want to work with containers, you just spin up Docker at the application on your laptop, either in Windows or OS X, and then you can start working with Docker right away. So it makes the barrier to entry in the development process or the development cycle significantly easier.
Yeah.
The big announcements that they had, this has been in a private beta for a little while. They said at the conference, it was a little amusing that when they announced this, they were inundated with 30,000 requests in the first 24 hours or 48 hours. For requests to get into the private beta. I know you and I got into the private beta. We've been playing with it for a little bit and absolutely love it. But the cool news is as of this week now, these two products are now in a public beta that you can go grab, you can install, and they're running the latest release candidate of the Docker engine 1.12. So if you've ever been interested in looking into this and seeing how to get involved in it, you don't have to worry about standing up virtual machines or any of that stuff. Now, you go to docker.com, say you want to get Docker, and you get two choices, Mac or Windows, download it, install it, and you are really off to the races within just a matter of minutes. They've done a really good job with this.
This is one of those things that people are going to look at and go, duh, yeah, of course it should have been like that. However, it wasn't quite that simple previously. So it's a very nice step forward, but hopefully nobody will notice. Yeah.
I get, for all you guys that were SharePoint devs, remember before we had developer tools in the 2010 release inside of Visual Studio and how we did stuff before? This is very much like that same thing. This is like your dev tools that we used to have in Visual Studio for SharePoint development, that it just made the barrier to entry so low for devs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, that was really nice. Yeah. Excellent.
So we got a link to the, I'll have the link to that in the show notes. But hey, the other one, the big one there that I think we could definitely take a lot of time talking about here is version 1.12, the big release they had here, which this is a pretty significant release.
Yeah, for sure. It looks to me like this is really the Docker engine growing up and becoming more mature, because there's a whole bunch of things going into it that you had to do yourself before. Mm-hmm. So for example, really simple example, containers talking to each other. How do they find each other, right? How do they, on a network, how do they address each other in such a way that from container A, I could say, I want to hit an HTTP endpoint on container B, right? Mm-hmm. Previously, you had to do some sort of service discovery mechanism where you told container A what container B's address was. And so there were solutions to this, like applications like Console, which containers register with this third-party service that runs in your alongside your other containers, but at a known endpoint, registers with that endpoint, and then other containers can use that for service discovery with other containers. That not entirely goes away, the need for something like that, but for basic scenarios, really does go away in Docker 1.12, where you can address containers with simple DNS names like you would, running between your PCs at home. If you've got a container called API, then you hit API, and it will, if you've got multiple API containers, it will DNS round robin you between those to sort of load balance between them. So it really simplifies service discovery in a basic sense, and also load balancing between those things.
Yeah, that was a big thing that I noticed too, that Swarm did. I agree with you. This to me, I know they even labeled it as 1.12 is going to they labeled it as includes built-in container orchestration, and this is a spot I think that you and I have talked about this in the past, where we saw this year as far as the container world, the Docker world of 2016, that this is where we thought we were going to see the biggest improvement. I think this was one of our predictions, and sure enough, I mean, this is a flat out arms race between Mesosphere, between Kubernetes, and now Docker Swarm. And the big thing that I saw from this that was really beneficial was that there were, for like a project that I'm working on, there was a lot of stuff that I was looking at the different orchestration tools that were out there and things that I was going to have to do, or that if I chose one, or I could rely on one of the other ones to do. For example, like the self-healing capabilities that Swarm is going to have, where in the past, or the scheduling and the self-healing. So in the past, if I wanted to, let's say I wanted to have one container running across my entire farm, and his job was to ensure that, just to look at the rest of the stuff across my entire network, looking at my application, his job was to report on certain things, or maybe to tell the orchestrator's API and say, hey, our queues are getting behind, scale this one container from a single instance up to 15 instances to be able to get through the queue a little bit faster.
Yeah.
The important thing is I would never want that single container to ever go down. If it ever went down, I want it to spin right back up. And there are things like Mesosphere handles this, Kubernetes handles this, but Swarm didn't really handle this so much. You had to use other things to do that. Swarm now handles that. You can now say this thing should always be up, and it will definitely bring this thing back to life. The other big thing too that I saw from this that was pretty interesting was a service deployment API. So now they've introduced a new command from the Docker CLI called, it's now Docker service. But essentially what this allows you to do is to very easily go through and to spin up, to control the scaling capabilities of your services, to do rolling updates, to do scheduling. You can even do stuff like we have this in, I believe, in Kubernetes, where we can do app-specific health checks. So you can register a health check with Swarm, and when you do a health check against your environment, against your deployment, it can run your code. Your code does a couple checks and stuff of the different containers to make sure things are doing what they're supposed to be doing, or what have you, and report back to Swarm. And then Swarm can look at that as a holistic view and say, things are good or things are bad. So for me, the thing I really liked about this is that a lot of stuff that I saw with Swarm in this 1.12 release is that it simplifies the decision on what you want to use for your orchestrator tool, in the sense that there is much more, it puts it much more on the same playing field as the other guys, as Mesosphere and as Kubernetes.
Yeah, definitely. Giving one slight counterpoint to this, I spoke to some folks at the conference who were like, yep, we'd never use Swarm.
Really?
And it basically boiled down to not being able to pick and choose your components for your orchestration engine. So they wanted to be able to choose what they used for service discovery, for example, choose what they used for their overlay networking component, choose what they used for load balancing and distribution stuff. And Swarm, it's kind of an all in, right? You use Swarm, which you can understand why they're doing it. But there were also some folks that were like, yeah, I'd never use it because I lose control over what I choose for the different components, and I can't choose best of breed for each piece.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense on two fronts. One, it makes sense that you would not want to choose a piece. You want to have more control over that stuff. But two, it makes a lot of sense that Docker is the one that's providing something like this as an all-in-one solution, because it makes it easier. It does make it easier in the adoption of containers and the adoption of Docker.
Absolutely.
To get into the environment. And when you grow up and you want to start moving to another one, to a different system, it's not so much, I mean, it's, I don't want to make it sound like it's just pick it up and drop it over somewhere else, but it isn't really that big of a deal to be able to switch between these different orchestration tools. There's probably going to be some stuff that's going to be specific in your application that's going to have a dependency on where you're running stuff. Like if you decide that you want to build an application today, and you're going to decide early on, do I want to run this in Azure, or I run this in AWS, or I run it in Google Cloud Platform? And you're going to make some decisions like, I'm going to develop this because I'm going to be assuming that all my data is going to be living inside Azure Blob Storage. Well, if you decide to pick it up and move it somewhere else over to, like, to say AWS, the APIs and some of the calls that you make, while there's a lot of stuff that's similar, S3 is not identical to how Azure does their storage. The main capabilities are, but how you deal with it, things are a little bit different. So
yeah,
there are going to be some stuff you're going to have to kind of play with here, but the fact that, I mean, that they've given all this and making it much easier and less pieces that you've got to go through and stand up, really good for organizations who want to start moving to this more microservice or container-based deployment approach.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, the closing keynote of DockerCon was really interesting too. It was a hackathon presentation, and they presented three what they call cool hacks, which were kind of the best hacks that they'd seen people work on. And I just thought I'd run through them real quick because I thought they were absolutely fascinating uses of Docker. The first of which was a project called Entropy, which was the session I mentioned about introducing latency and packet reordering and stuff on your network. There's a project called Entropy that this guy Jeff had built, which does exactly that. And so it introduces chaos into your system. And so he demonstrated that. He built it in 4 days. He's looking for additional contributors, and it's pretty sweet. This guy worked on some humongous services at Amazon. Now he's an independent consultant. So he's worked on, you know, large-scale distributed systems a bunch, and a lot of that experience is coming to the front with this project Entropy. That was a really cool one. But the other two were, I think, even cooler. The second one was using Docker for serverless computing. So there's this trend in serverless right now with, you know, AWS Lambda and Azure Functions of, you know, putting a piece of code together and having it run when something happens, right? Like an event fires or a blob ends up in your storage. And we talked a little bit about this previously, and we've had some folks on the show to talk about it with Azure Functions. But this guy had built a system that let you do that with Docker containers. So he'd built a standard sort of web application. It had a web server, it had a message queue, it had a worker role, and it had a database. And then he showed converting that into completely serverless type solution, where per request that came in from the internet, a container would get spun up, service that request, and then die again. Much like an Azure function would, or a AWS Lambda function would. And so containers could spin up other containers to do particular jobs, but they were single function, single request containers, which I thought was really cool too. Yeah. So basically he's recreated CGI. And that really, he pointed out, it was he pointed out that wasn't really what he was trying to prove, that we shouldn't be really building web applications like CGI apps of old. But his point was that you could use Docker for, it's a perfect solution for single-use, short-lived request type processing. And so you could imagine doing that based on a queue or, you know, something like that, that you get a container for a particular job and then it goes away. So that, I thought that was really an interesting one. And then the third one was this company that deals with a lot of IoT stuff and devices and putting out code and managing IoT devices. And they showed a hack where they had a drone whose control programming was running in a Docker container on the drone. So for control surfaces and gyros and cameras and all that sort of stuff. And I was thinking, wow, that was pretty cool. And then they showed in-flight updating of that container on the fly. So what they did is they demoed it where it was flying pretty much above the audience on stage. And they put some more code into the container, which turned on the infrared camera on the drone. And so they checked that code in. It went through CI and CD, got pushed out to a trusted registry. The drone picked up that there was a new image available, pulled it down, and they did some sort of bit streaming technology to get it over a 2G connection or something. Got it to the drone. It stood up the new container beside the old container, synced its flight state, and then when it was in agreement that it had done that, it dropped the old container and the new one was running the drone.
And, oh my God.
And the guys had a really funny comment. He said, basically, if this demo works, the drone won't fall out of the sky. And the way you sort of knew it worked is they had this web application that was running in the container on the drone, and so you could hit the website, and it showed telemetry from the drone in real time, like gyro movements and all that sort of stuff. And then when it switched over the containers, obviously the infrared camera started working, and on the web app you saw the infrared camera pop up, and it was showing a live infrared view of the audience off this drone, and it was... It was pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That is really cool. I have to go back and find that. That was the one I blew off yesterday. That's the one I want to go back and watch that now.
I hope they recorded that one. It was a pretty cool session, seeing some just crazy hacks that people were working on. So yeah, those were the three hacks.
Yeah, it was live stream, but I'm sure it was recorded. We definitely have video to it, so we'll just have to see. But that's cool. Yeah, so I think there was one or two other announcements that we definitely wanted to highlight on, but we don't want to spend too much time here. I definitely want to point you guys to go get links where you can find this stuff. One thing that they did announce is something called a distributed application bundle. It's or a DAB file. And this is currently
experimental.
Thank you.
Yep.
basically what this is, it's a way for an organization to package up all of the artifacts required to ship and deploy multi-containerized applications. A DAB file is going to contain all of the services required to run the app, so each one of the different microservices, and the details of the different images to use, ports to expose, networks to use, all that stuff. Essentially, it's an easy way for you to walk your entire application over to your ops team, give them this one DAB file and say, would you deploy the application using this DAB file? It was a pretty effective demo, unfortunately, like the other demos they did, and this is just personally a style choice, is that they did very much like role-playing with all of their, a lot of their demos.
That's totally cringeworthy.
Oh, I can't take that at a conference, man. Just... We're not kindergartners. We understand how this stuff, I don't need you to role play it for me.
Yeah, it's not my favorite way of doing it.
Yeah. Yep. But then the other big news too was around much tighter integration and better, how would you put it, maybe adoption of Docker with AWS and Azure.
Yes. Yeah. So this was all about when you want to run a Docker swarm in Azure or in AWS, there's still a lot of manual work. You've got to configure ports and networks and do all that sort of stuff. And it looks like what they've been doing is a bunch of work to help you provision all of those things in Azure and AWS and then keep them provisioned correctly, right? So when you map ports, opening up the right ports and the Azure or AWS firewalls or load balancers and things, mapping stuff correctly and just keeping your infrastructure healthy, which... it will be very helpful because it's a lot of manual work right now.
Yeah, and it's that, but it's also they've done a really good job, at least from what it looked like in the blog post that they published and they talked about during the keynotes here. We'll have a link to in the show notes, is taking advantage of the different platform capabilities of each one of these different public clouds. So, for instance, a big one here is being able to configure security groups and virtual networks, provisioning things like, say, in Azure, it's using ARM templates, and AWS is using something they call Cloud Formation. The big thing, though, for me that I noticed, too, was that being able to do the auto scale stuff. So in Azure, they take advantage of the VM scale sets, taking advantage of the load balancers that we have inside of Azure, being able to provision infrastructure load balancers and update them dynamically as apps are created and updated. So it's a lot. It's really cool. So the thing for this one that really kind of I need to understand more. I'm a little confused on it. Maybe we can get Ross back on the show now that we've had this announcement here. Is how does this play either with or compete, or how is it different than ACS?
Yeah,
and that I was a little fuzzy with that, because a lot of the stuff that they talked about, I was like, what's the value that ACS is giving me when I have something, when I have Docker doing their own tight integration with this? I mean, I get that, you know, ACS has two different options. You've got Swarm and you have Mesosphere. But if I choose to go Swarm, then I don't know. I just don't get it. And I'm not questioning it. I'm just kind of like, I need more information on it.
Yeah, me too. I've applied to the private beta for it. So I'm going to see if I get into that and see if I can ever play around with it before.
Yeah.
Before trying to figure it all out without the information. But yeah, those are good questions. I don't know.
Okay. Well, do you have anything else in the conference you want to talk about here before we do our picks?
No, I just think summary, it was a great show. It was really interesting to see Microsoft participating the way they did. Great to see so many people show up for it. The momentum is building. Like I've said before, I think there is an enormous containerization wave that Windows and Microsoft Enterprise developers are not even aware is coming. And it's in their future.
I agree. I mean, I'll speak just firsthand from the developers that are out there. If you haven't played at all with this, give yourself a tiny little project and go read up on it and learn about it. And I'm almost of the mindset now to where if you're building any kind of a service-based application, or you're building anything like a website or anything like a worker job, I mean, really anything that's going to be hosted, I'm having a really hard time seeing a use case of when you would not want to go with this style of development. It fits. I mean, I'm not saying that that this is like the panacea for everything, but it definitely is. It's incredibly compelling.
Yeah, and for a Microsoft developer, now you can do C# with .NET Core or ASP.NET in a Windows container on Windows Server 2016, Technical Preview 5 or 6 or whatever they're up to now.
5, yeah.
And it's with Docker for, you know, Docker for Windows and on your dev machine. It's easy. It's easier than it's ever been, and it's very Microsoft friendly now, which I think a lot of people have been standoffish because of that in the past.
Oh, yeah. It's all Linux-based before. So
yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Should we do some picks?
Absolutely. So hey, why don't you go first here?
Yeah, I've got the first one is SpaceX are launching CRS-9 in July, and NASA have opened up the NASA social event applications for that. It's July, what is it, 16, is it? 15 or 16. The launch is on the 16th, but I think the social event is on the 15th, 16th, something like that. Anyway, so you've heard AC and I geek out about these in these events in the past. So if you're interested, now is the chance. The deadline has already passed, unfortunately.
Well, technically,
I just read that. Dang, Nabbit, that didn't work out well.
At the time of the recording, they've got 11 hours to go through to do it. But problem is, we publish a week later. So,
oh, dude. What a terrible pick. I can't think of anything. We'll consider it.
So this was CJ's first install of CJ's teasers. Now we go on to CJ's picks.
Yeah, that was a shocker. I'm really sorry about that.
I was wondering how you were going to play this.
You totally should apply, but unfortunately, you don't have a time machine. Okay. All right. My second pick, the Living Computer Museum, is a exhibit or a museum funded by Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft, along with Bill Gates, obviously, in Seattle. If you're ever in the neighborhood, I've lived here 9 years and I haven't gone to see this thing. They've moved into some new headquarters or into a new event space, and it is fantastic. Like, they've got, it's all about the history of computing, and they've got a ton of old mainframes and computers, PCs, Macs, everything. Everything from VAX systems and IBM mainframes all the way up to like PDP-11s, up I should say. They have PDP-11s and 7s and punch card machines and tape machines and all this stuff. Like, and it's all working. And it's amazing. You can sit down at these things. You can use them. You can play around with them. And it's fantastic. And also their website, livingcomputermuseum.org, has access to a whole bunch of online systems. So you can go in, create yourself a login, and then go use these systems online. And so they've got like DEC systems. They've got, what else they got here? VAX systems that you can log into. All sort of stuff over the internet. You could go do jobs and then drop them on mainframes and various computers and all that sort of stuff. It's super cool and super geeky. So that's one of my picks, the Living Computer Museum. And then my final pick, I have a couple of wind-up watches, automatic watches that wind as you walk and all that sort of stuff. And completely not to do with computers. It's very analog and very non-digital. But my wife bought me a watch winder, an automatic watch winder, so that the watches that you're not currently wearing, you stuff into this watch winder and it sits there and periodically during the day, it turns the watches for you. And so it winds up your watches, which I don't have smart watches or anything like that. And I go for automatic watches that wind as you walk. And so for me, it was a real pain in the butt to change watches because you'd have to set the time and wind them up. When I switched, if you didn't wear a watch for a few days, it would obviously not wind itself and die. And so you had to do that. And so VersaWatchWinders.com, I highly recommend.
Very cool.
Yeah. How about you?
All right. I've got three. None of them have anything to do on the tech side. So it's fun stuff. So first one is, I think I talked a little bit about this, at least in the Father's Day episode, we talked about it. But my son bought this thing called Anki Overdrive.
Oh, we heard about that in the Father's Day episode quite a lot.
Oh my God, dude, this is a lot of fun. This is a ton of fun. This is one of those toys that, you know, my son actually is the one that sat down and bought it. He used his own money. So it's $150 to get into it. And then all the expansion stuff and everything is usually $20 to $40 you add onto it.
Wow.
He saved up his money. He bought it. But yeah, I could have bought it myself. This thing is awesome. So as kind of a throwback, you and Ryan Duguid and Jeremy Thake and I met up with this guy as we were leaving the F1 race in Austin in the airport one day. And we learned about this and we're talking about it. But basically what it is it's a racetrack. It's like slot cars, but the cars they're controlled via Bluetooth and Wi-Fi by your phone. That's the controller. Mm-hmm. And the track, they understand the track. Now, the track is all, I think that they're connected to the track via RFID, so they know where the track is as they're racing on it. Mm-hmm. But what's neat about this is that it simplifies a lot of the stuff. It takes one part of slot car racing out and adds an extra element. So the part that it takes out is trying to keep the cars on the track. You don't steer. The cars race along the track and you can change lanes or you can move across the track, but you don't have to worry about following the turns or anything. The cars always follow the turns. So you control the throttle, but then you also have weapons. And so you can shoot like these virtual weapons on from your phone and you can see like little laser lights popping up on the front of the car or they're showing up in the tail of the car when you're getting hit to drain energy and stuff. It is a blast. Every person in my family is playing it. We bought two extra cars, constantly changing tracks up and everything. Man, it's a ton of fun. And if I can convince my son to part with it for about 4 or 5 days, I'm going to try to bring it out to Seattle when I come out there for a little personal event so that maybe you can get the four of us to get playing it when we're out there.
Oh, yeah, that'd rock.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. It travels really well, too. It breaks down really easy. All the tracks snap together with magnets. They've done a phenomenal job with this.
Nice. Yeah, well, I'd love to try it out. Highly recommended by your kids and you, it seems.
And my wife. The races take about, you can do like 15 lap, 30 lap or 45 lap races. And it's perfect timing because the battery on the cars lasts about 30 minutes. Mm. Comes with a little recharging stand. But so the cars usually last for about 30 minutes. So it's great to do like, you know, after dinner, before bedtime or after lunch or something like that.
Cool.
Another thing too is I'm going to call out a new album that came out. This is funny. I told my son that, hey, a new album came out by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And he's like, what's an album? I'm like, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So Red Hot Chili Peppers, huge fan of Red Hot Chili Peppers from when my younger days. New album came out called The Getaway, and it's vintage Chili Peppers. It's just that summertime funk. This one you can tell they've aged and things are a little bit more chill, but it is, I can't turn this up loud enough. I'm blasting this on 11 in my car all the time.
Nice. Yeah, I love a bit of Chili. I went to one of their concerts once upon a time. Fantastic.
I've always wanted, that's one of my bucket list shows. And then another one is a book that I'm finishing up right now. There's a movie coming out later this year called Ready Player One. It's by Ernest Cline. Mm. It's based on a book called Ready Player One. I'll let you go take a look at it. If you've read the book, if you were at all a gamer as a kid, then you will love the book read books for pleasure, I should say. I hope everybody that listens to the podcast can read. We just lost our illiterate contingent.
I'd better leave.
He's got another book out called Armada, which is it's not the sequel to it, but it's the second book or another book that he had. It's really cool. It's a really cool concept. I don't want to give the premise of the book away. So let's just say I got a spoiler coming. So if you skip ahead about 30 seconds in the show, you'll miss it. But essentially what it is that the idea is that everyone has been, all kids and people in the world, we have, back in the 70s, we made contact with an alien race. Mm-hmm. They are now coming to destroy us. We've been fighting them off for years, but now we need the enlistment of everybody in the world to fight. Mm-hmm. So, but they don't want to tell everybody in the world that they need to fight this alien race because they think that there's going to be this hysteria and civilization will collapse. Mm. So there are two video games that they release. One is called Armada. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other one is called Terra Firma. And the idea is that you're either controlling a drone fighter or you're controlling like a drone mech and you're fighting these battles. Well, all of a sudden, about 24 hours before the attack happens, they basically tell the world, hey, guess what? They're really coming. And by the way, go to your computers, sign up for account. All of you that have been playing, you're going to control these hundreds of thousands of drones that we have created in all these different places and all these mechs.
Wow.
And from your internet connections, you're going to fight to save the world. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. 80% into the book, but it's pretty interesting. It's pretty good.
That sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to take a look at that. I'm pretty sure that's what's happening on Facebook. When you post like real things happen on the other side of the world, I'm sure of it.
You think so?
No. No.
Okay.
It wouldn't surprise me though.
Yeah, it's a cool book though. A lot of people said it was a big letdown from Ready Player One. It's not a letdown at all. It's very different, but it's for the same audience. So I thought it was done. I thought it was done really well.
Gotcha.
Ta-da. Those are my picks.
Excellent.
Yeah, man. So, hey, good show this week. A little bit of Azure news and a whole lot of Docker news.
Lots and lots to catch up with. And I hope you enjoyed the show.
Absolutely. So, hey, if you're listening to this, I will be, and you got the episode and you're listening to it right away when you got it. I'm going to be at SP TechCon when you're listening to this up in Boston. So the SharePoint conference. If you happen to be there, definitely come check out my session. I know I'm doing a session on Wednesday morning. So by the time this comes out on Tuesday, my first session on the Microsoft Graph will be done. But on Tuesday morning, I'm doing a session on using Angular 2 to build Office add-ins. And I'm doing it all inside of a container. So you don't have to know about containers, but I'm going to show you some of the benefits of actually using containers. And should have a blog post out about the same time when it comes out on how you can actually run the entire demo if you've got Docker for Mac or Docker for Windows installed.
Awesome. Look forward to
it. Pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Hey, it's a good week, and I will talk to you soon, CJ.
Catch up.
Later, everybody. Did you like this episode? Send us a tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a wave or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Air by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to
interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.